play. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast. We are back to preview the Mayakoba Classic, the final event of the 2020 calendar year. We are in the 2021 season, final event of the 2020 calendar year. It's actually a pretty loaded field down there in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. You can find me on Twitter at BDMTrick. You can find the podcast at Always Press DFS. And as always, my co-host on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how are we doing, my friend?
Man, I'm all right. Woke up to about 2 inches of snow outside.
It's no golf season back in Kentucky, huh?
It's, it was November until today. I guess today's December, but this is just ridiculous. You
well,
doing all right?
December, it's fair. Yeah, I'm good. It's about 62 today. Yeah, it's a little chilly. This morning. It was 31 this morning. Ice on the vehicles this morning. So, yeah, I'm doing. But we could use the rain. So if you want to give us some, it's cool.
Yeah, but, I don't need any more.
Yeah, we need it. But other than that, we're good. How was the Thanksgiving holiday? Everything good in the Jesse household?
It was good. Just dad came over and that was it. Just a small gathering.
Yep.
Mom
and her husband, and then my sister-in-law and brother-in-law. So six of us, all family, little circle that we live in. We got together and had some turkey and the usual stuff. But basically just, once you have a kid, everyone wants to visit all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's funny how that works. They never wanted to visit. Now they all want to come visit.
It's not the best time in the world.
No, that's the best part about it for us. So they can't all visit at the same time.
Right.
But that's about it. Trying to just get through everything. We're almost into 2021, as we said. This is the last event of the calendar year. So after this week, we might get a wild hair up our ass and do something preview-wise. And just, we usually do. We usually take a few weeks off and then we get kind of, okay, let's get ready. But next main event is the Tournament of Champions over in Hawaii. That'll be interesting to see how that goes, because when COVID first hit there, you couldn't go to Hawaii without quarantining for 2 weeks in Hawaii. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out here January.
I think now you can go there as long as you have proof
tested,
of a
right?
test. Yeah.
Within like 48 hours or something like that.
Apparently.
I'm pretty sure the PGA Tour can make that happen.
Because I do know a Facebook acquaintance who went there, and he's been just – taking pictures all over the place. So I'm assuming he's not quarantined into his hotel room.
Yeah. People seem like they're living life in Hawaii pretty well. So it looks like it's even better than it used to be. So,
right.
Yeah. But people are here for golf. So let's talk some golf. I'll be totally honest. Did not watch the match at all. I forgot it was on. I've heard a lot of mixed reviews. I heard Charles was funny, which we all knew that was going to happen. I heard the overall golf was pretty crappy because, you have Phil Mickelson and three athletes. Did you watch it at all?
I did. Yeah, actually I did. I didn't remember that it was on. And then people were kind of tweeting about it or whatever. So I flipped it over. It was actually pretty good TV, like usual, with that, like the last time when they had Tiger and Phil, and then what was it?
Brady
and Manning. Yeah. But it was, it was fun to, like, I really look forward to if it ever happens, Phil being a commentator.
Yeah.
He knows golf. They don't call him Fig Jam for no reason, but he knows how to analyze it. He knows how to talk about it. And in my opinion, he's awesome to listen to, just as a golf junkie myself. So yeah, the golf was not good. Phil hit some great shots, but Barkley was a billion times better than anybody ever thought he would be.
That's what I heard from everybody. It was one of those. That's why they were the dogs going into the event, because Barkley was there to say he was going to basically weigh down Phil. But Barkley showed up and it was pretty easy for Team Mickelson. It looked like, I'll have to check it out later. I literally, like I said, didn't even realize it was on. I was waiting for people to leave my house because family likes to stay too long. And I was watching football. I'll be honest.
Yes, and Steph didn't play very well. He just, you could tell it wasn't his day. I think he was maybe nervous, and that's weird for NBA MVP, to get nervous, but that's golf, man.
Yeah, golf, and literally they could have played that 12 more times or whatever, and it could have been 6-6. Like, yeah. That's golf. But since you did watch it, the biggest critique I heard is people are saying you basically need two pros, one on each team. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes, yes, okay. I would agree with that. I saw somebody have a great idea, Tiger, and somebody else, and then DJ and Gretzky.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be really good.
What they said for Tiger,
because I've followed Gretzky and DJ a lot at the pro am, and obviously you can hear things you can't hear on TV. They talk a lot of trash. A lot of trash to each other and whoever, because they usually play with Jake Owens and Spieth, so they all know each other pretty well.
Right.
And it's a, it's like four buddies playing golf. Like when you miss a putt or something, there's like chuckles and stuff. Yeah. So you wouldn't think you're at a pro event with those. So that could be fun. I'm with you there. But yeah, I'm glad they're doing it. It raises money and it is something fun and different. It just, they need to go back to what worked. I think that match two was awesome. That was so much fun to watch. So
that was fun.
Go back to that, see how it works. But we'll see what the next one is. And I'm with you on Phil. I've said it with other sports like baseball. And Phil reminds me kind of a better Flaherty or Flaherty per se. Like the personality's there, but he can talk more eloquently, I guess, about the actual game of golf.
He's a better Azinger. He's a better Faldo. I mean,
if you can get a guy in the booth that can actually have personality while explaining something, that goes a long ways. Now, the biggest problem will be is if he goes to a CBS or whatever, will they let him do it? That's the question. Like, I don't think Phil would sign up for it if he couldn't.
Right.
But that would be the thing, because you got to imagine, like, you've heard Flaherty on other stuff. He can let loose, and they don't let him let loose. And I love it when he lets loose. So we'll see. But that's for another day. Let's talk about the Mayakoba Classic. It's usually in February. We're getting it in November this year, because why not? So, what do you have for some past event histories? We have a lot of event history for this.
So last year was the second of Brendan Todd's 2019 wins. He won. He shot 20 under, one shot over Adam Long, Carlos Ortiz, and Vaughn Taylor. 2018 was another older gentleman, Matt Kuchar, 22 under, one shot over Danny Lee. Patton Kizzire was the 2017 champion, 19 under, one shot over Ricky Fowler. Pat Perez, your boy Flat Bill, 21 under, two shots over Gary Woodland in 2016. Graham McDowell, Charlie Hoffman, Harris English have all won this as well, and a bunch of other random dudes.
Yeah, and a thing you're going to hear a lot this week, the similarities there, and it goes with the course preview, is you don't have to be a bomber here, because at El Camellon, basically El Chameleon Golf Course, it's a par 71, little over 7,000 yards. Very short for PGA standards. It's a resort course. That's why you should get in the birdie scores. Like you said, Flat Bill shot 21 under. It's on the ocean, so it's always the deal is if it's windy, you're going to get low scores. If it's not, let's rock and roll. So it's going to be a lot like the Bermuda, like Punta Cana, things along those lines. So that'll be something to keep in mind when I talk fan share later. I've got kind of a conglomerate of stuff there to discuss. But past Palm Greens, which you only see pretty much in these ocean-type courses for the most part, those will be a little different. They run a little slower here. So, again, resort course, birdie-making fest. Distance not important, but you have to be very accurate because there's lots of hazards here. There's sinkholes if you're not hitting the right parts of the fairway. Like, the ball just kind of – you're in a little hole and you can't see where you're going, so that's fun. There's lots, like, on this around the fairways. You have jungles, you have forest, and then you have the ocean. So that comes into play there. There's three par fives, four par threes, the rest par fours. None of the par threes are over 160. None of the par fours go past 460. All the par fives are gettable based on weather. So it's a very, very scoreable golf course if you come out of the fairway. That's why Brendan Todd did very well here. One of the most accurate golfers off the tee in the PGA Tour. Last but not least, when you look at the weather, wind does not look to be too much of an issue. They're talking about maybe 10 mile an hour gusts. There's off and on 60% chances of rain Thursday, Friday, and part of Saturday. So depending on when they play, if there's cancellation or not, it's going to be wet. So you'd imagine lift, clean, and play comes into play. Plus, very soft, except this short, not fast greens. This could turn into a absolute wedge fest, birdie fest situation. So keep that in mind when you're looking at it. But stay in the fairway, and you can score at will here. If you get out of whack, it could be a lot of trouble. What key stats are you looking at this week?
Yeah, it's a resort course, so we gotta have guys who make the most birdies, preferably this week, with the least amount of bogeys. And then, a lot of greens in regulation and or strokes gained. approach. Off the tee, not a huge deal. You do have to keep it in the fairway because there are, if you hit it in the jungle, it's going to be difficult. But, you know, we're talking about pros here. I look at scrambling a little bit, and then there's plenty of course history.
Yeah, plenty of course history. And let's talk Fanshare Sports here for a minute. Again, friend of the podcast here, use promo code ALWAYSPRESS for 20% off the package of your choice. Guys coming in good form in the last five, and Pat and Kizire lead the way on that stat. But then we get have a little more fun here. Courses that are par 71, 7,000 to 7,200 yards in the past five events. I'm going to make it so guys play three or more of these five. Daniel Berger leads the way. A few others, Joel Damon, Wesley Bryan, and Abraham Answer are scoring very well in this field on events like that. Paspalum Greens last five events. We have Justin Thomas, Pat Perez, Ricky Fowler, Danny Lee, who withdrew, Mark Leishman, and Brian Gay playing well here. Of course, Brian Gay, I believe, won the Bermuda. And so then what I did is I tried to find them all. I might have missed some, but I went through the history on Fanshare. It goes back to 2014 between the Mayakoba, the Puerto Rico, and the couple Bermudas / Punta Canas that we have in the system here. I might have missed a couple, but I got like 14 events all up here. And when I looked at DraftKings scoring for players in this field, obviously not all of them played it, but like Brian Gay has played five of those events. He ranks third in DraftKings scoring. Ricky Fowler's played two events. He ranks first. You look at guys that played six of those events. Russell Knox plays really well in these conditions. So they're not going to play in all of them, but like Danny Lee, Scott Piercy, Bryce Garnett's played in all of them, and he's technically 10th in scoring in this field. So it's one way to kind of see how guys like playing on these kind of oceany courses, birdie fest courses, but the wind might pop up and mess with you courses, that kind of situation, course fit, as some would say. Since we have a bunch of course history, if you have to differentiate, it's one way to look at it. So we'll go with that. All right, DraftKings scoring, and this is one of the best fields they've ever had. They had, I believe, one guy maybe, if not zero, in the top 50 in the world last year here. They have 13 this year. So it's a much more loaded field as guys want those FedEx points because they saw with the shortened year last year, not that many guys went to East Lake like they used to, and getting to East Lake gets you a lot of money and a lot of exemptions. So you want to get to East Lake. Justin Thomas, 11-4. Brooks, 11,000. Finau, 10-7. Berger, 10-4. Harris English, 10-1. Obviously, you can make arguments for all of these, Jesse. Who are you looking at up here?
Yeah, definitely make arguments with all three of, or all four or five of them.
Five of them.
Five, yeah. JT, you know, obviously, at the highest price up here, he's played her one time, 23rd in 2014. Two straight top fours, fourth at the Masters, second at the Zozo. He's playing very well. Don't know why you wouldn't play him. Brooks, he would be the kind of sketch guy, obviously, up here, but he might have the least amount of ownership, too. His only start here, he missed a cut in 2013. Now, he does have two straight top tens. At the Masters, he finished seventh, which is a very sneaky top ten, and then fifth at the Houston Open. I think Finau's fine, but he'll be super popular. He's got some weird course history. Missed cut 16th, missed cut 7th.
He gets so wayward off the tee sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it to me, I don't know, this is a week to kind of avoid him. Berger, one appearance here, 2014, 51st. Hasn't played since the Zozo, didn't play the Masters, but has played okay, nothing outstanding. And I think English will be chalk again too. I mean, 19th here, or in 2019, he finished 5th. 2018, he finished 68th, three straight miscuts before that, but coming off a solid finish at the RSM, which was the last event where he finished 6th. So I like JT. I think Finau in English will be chalky. I think Brooks is a decent GPP play here as they kind of pivot off the – I mean, JT will get ownership too, but, I mean, JT would be the guy if I'm up here. And I don't know that I'll even make it up here, dude, to be honest with you, because – I got to find me an old guy in the middle here somewhere that's going to win out of nowhere. That's apparently what happens this year.
That's what happens in the fall swing.
Every year.
Yep, yeah. At this course too. But yeah, that's right. I missed my headline. The year Kuchar won was the good old caddy year.
Yeah, that
Kuchar
was.
To tip your caddy, folks. Tip your caddies.
Yeah, that's when he gave him $2,000 or something for the week. And he won a million. Man.
Yeah, no, this range is interesting because like I like JT a lot. He's looking at the early fan share ownership projections. Kind of the perks of doing it on Tuesday, we have something to look at here. He's the highest guy in this 10K range, by a few percentage points. So that's, there's that, but we've seen JT at times, obviously a lesson driver course, which might help him. He can get wayward at times, and that could get things interesting. I think he's fine, but it's just one of those at that price point. And usually I don't mind a lot of 6K guys. This week it's pretty ugly. Like the bottom 7K I can live with some of them. That 6K range gets dirty really quick, really, really quick. So I might be trying to avoid that. I think Daniel Berger is interesting to me. Obviously, we've been on Team Berger for quite some time. He's projected to be the lowest in this range right now. Guy's playing amazing golf. Hasn't played in a few weeks, which makes me wonder, is he going to be rusty or not? I don't think he would be. I'd imagine he's ready to rock and roll, but playing amazing golf coming into this. So 10-4 for him gets my attention. And Harris English, I like a lot at 10-1. He won't be as chalky as you think because you have either going up to like a Brooks or a JT or right below him. And then when we get to the 9K range, I have heard Abraham Answer's name mentioned a million times already. So I think Harris English kind of gets blocked out a little bit. He's projected to be slightly higher on than Berger, but like 14%. We'll see how that turns out, which I can live with that with Harris English. He's as locked in as they come for hitting fairways, hitting greens, good course history. I think at 10-1, he's very strong. And also, I think some guys will avoid him for the price point alone, like Russell Henley like a week or so ago at RSM, 2 weeks ago. That price point, people said they couldn't play Russell Henley at that price point. I've already seen guys in our Slack chat go, 10-1 for Harris English, how do I pay that price? Well, you got to look at the field. You got to look at different situations. Different. It's not a bomber's course this week. Different situation here. Harris English at 10-1. I can get behind that. And I think it's a way to get off of the big boys up top. All right. 9K range here. You got Abraham Answer at 99. The chalk is real and the chalk is valid. Vic Hovland at 97. Fowler at 95. Henley 93. Zalatoris 92. Neiman 91. And Corey Connors at 9,000. What gets your attention here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I'd rather go to Hovland. I mean, if Answer is going to be chalk, I'm not an Answer guy. I never have been. I don't know that I ever will be. And I've lost plenty of money because I haven't played him. So keep that in mind. But Hovland, you know, two straight missed cuts here. So he played the last 2 years. He has missed the cut in both years. Coming off a 15th place finish at the Houston Open, he hasn't missed a cut on tour, I'm guessing, since this one. I don't know, maybe he missed one in between. Yeah, the Honda Classic he missed there, and then missed the Phoenix
very,
Open.
Very tough golf course.
Anyways, you know, he since the restart, he hasn't missed a cut. So I'd rather go to Hovland myself, even though the course history is not great. Zalatoris at 9,200 hasn't played here. He rates out very well from the stats model. Bermuda, he finished 16th. Shriners, he was 5th. Did not play the RSM, obviously didn't play the Masters. So he's had about a month off. I think Neiman at 9,100, he did miss the cut here last year, and he didn't have a great showing the year before that, finished 60th. Didn't play great at the RSM, but you know, before that, he was playing well. So be interesting to see you know, how he shakes out this week. But from a GPP perspective, I like him because I do think that Zalatoris and the next guy I'm going to talk about, Corey Connors, will get ownership, and Neiman might be sandwiched in between there. And so Connors missed cut here 2018, 75th in 2017. Not great, but dude, two straight top 10s, including a top 10th at the freaking Masters. Mm-hmm. You know, it's quite obvious that he's his putting isn't murdering him like it usually does. So maybe he figured out something there and he's hitting the ball really well. Corey Connors at 9,000. Borderline cash game. The only thing I don't like about him is the course history, obviously.
Yeah, course history is pretty putrid, but when we think about slower greens, even if it rains, it might help the putting out a little bit. So yep. I'm going to kind of look at that and think, okay, if we get that situation, you know, there's a couple more guys we might be talking about pretty soon that I never play that we might be playing. But I love Corey Connors, and he's projected to be pretty chalky right now, slightly less than Answer, slightly less than JT. But I'm not going to play all three of them, so it's okay. I like Connors a lot. The ball striking is impeccable right now. You mentioned 10th, 10th, 24th, 8th prior to that. Like he's locked in right now. And those are some pretty strong fields, as you mentioned. So Connors at 9,000, I love. I don't mind Abraham Answer at all. It is chalky. You don't want to eat all the chalk, but you know, he's from dual citizenship. He's from Mexico. He's been playing outstanding since the President's Cup. You know, 8th here last year, 21st, 9th, coming to 13th at the Masters. And it's just, that's because of a choke job on Sunday. He was in the final group, I think, going into Sunday, or the second to last group. So that's just one of those deals where he's young and hasn't figured out exactly how to close just yet. But he's darn close. So I don't mind Abe at all. You can make arguments for all these guys that you mentioned. Hovland's interesting. Fowler's projected to be like 7% owned, super low owned, 16th in a second here in the past. He's making cuts, but he's still not really finishing high. So it makes it kind of challenging to me. And then Zalatoris, I think he's a great play here. So all these guys are locked in. Answer and Connors are my main two guys, but they are chalky. So if you want to pivot to a Zalatoris or a Hovland, I am all about that. No worries about that at all. That's why it's fun to do the Cascade, because you can get chalky with and play Answer and Connors together. And then when you have to, you know, mix your Cascade up, you can get different in other spots and still be okay. That's what I really like about the Cascade, is you don't have to completely punt your lineup just because of all the chalk. So that's nice. All right, 8K range in this one. Carlos Ortiz, $8,900. Billy Ho, 88. Leishman, 87. Todd, 86. Munoz, 85. That's quite the price drop for Sebastian. Harmon, 84. If for those playing FanDuel, Harmon's the minimum 7K. Just a heads up on that one. Griot is 83. Woodland, 82. Howell, 81. Domin and Kazire, 8,000. This is going to be a popular range because you don't want to dip too much farther into this player pool. So what do you like in this 8K range?
Yeah, I like Ortiz coming off the win at the Houston Open. Finished third here last year. I think he's fine. And I do think that given a lot of these names above like the 8K range might potentially be a little underowned this week. Potentially.
Looking at the 8K, sorry to interrupt you, they're pretty much majority are 10 or 11% and less. So you're getting a lot of ownership decrease in this 8K range.
Munoz coming off the miscut at the RSM. That's why we're getting that that price decrease there. He was 9,000 at the RSM, down to 8,500. It's because I played him there. Miscut here last year, 64th year before. So the course history isn't great. I told you I should. I turned off my look email. Yeah, dude. I mean. Works terrible right now. Griot at 8,300. He tilts me to death. He's got good course history, though. Four straight made cuts here, including two top tens in 2017 and 2016. And he's coming off a solid showing at the RSM. He did miss the cut at the Houston Open, but made a bunch of cuts in a row before that. So I do like Griot there. And I was looking at Howell, man. Kind of a mixed course history, but good if he makes the cut. I mean, 20th miscut, 4th, 7th, 17th miscut, 6th. So basically, since 2013, if he makes the cut, he's making he's finishing inside the top 20, which would be great at this price this week. Come off the 30th place finish at the RSM, played the Masters, made the cut, 46 there. And then Kazire, at 8,000, obviously past winner here, has never missed a cut since 2015, which is his first appearance. But besides the win, has that Kim? What you got?
One more thing on Hal there. After you mentioned the 20th, the cut, 4th, 7th, 17th cut, 6th, 16th, 13th, 20th, his next 3 years. So it just keeps going. So 8 of 10 cuts, all 20th or better.
Yeah, that's wild. That's wild.
That's pretty good course history. It's just basically telling you it's one of those. And I'd love to look back and see, did he miss it on the number or something on his other two? Like how far off the cut line was he?
Right.
Really can make that even more interesting there. But yeah, in this 8K range, I like Carlos Ortiz quite a bit. I've been playing him a lot in these Birdie Fest events. Yeah, he can get wayward. That can get nasty, but he's pretty local to the area. He finished second here last year. He's got a 9th place finish about 5 years ago, coming in great form. He checks the box there. I don't mind Brendan Todd again. I know he had a rough go of it there, but then a 37th at RSM. When you want to praise accuracy, Brendan Todd's that guy. His putter's just been a mess right now. So maybe getting back here will help him quite a bit. So I don't mind Todd. Griot was kind of the one I was joking about when I was talking about Connors, because it's a guy that can't putt. But you mentioned he's been putting better of late. He's one of the better ball strikers in the field. So course history, if you can get the flat stick rolling at 83, there's a lot to like about Griot. And for regular listeners of the show, I usually don't play Griot. I like him this week, so take that with what you want. I do like CH3. I have him down as well. And then last but not least, Joel Dahman, 6th place here last year, 41st, 23rd. So made 3 straight cuts. But it's been kind of weird for him. He's making cuts right now on tour. He's made 4 straight. He's made 5 of 6, but 50th, 8th, 38th, 58th, cut 52nd. So he's having like a blow-up round in there every time to kind of ruin things. He has a lot. He goes low a lot, but he has some blow-up rounds that make it kind of tricky to keep it going. But I don't mind him, because if anybody can get hot in a birdie fest, it's Dahman, and he's one of the most accurate drivers on tour with the driver. So a lot of these guys will club down because their driver can get kind of cattywampus. Dahman doesn't hit it as far as the rest, but he can hit it far enough, and very accurate. That could help him a lot in this event, especially if it gets wet out there and the ball's not rolling a ton. Being able to use your driver comfortably can go a long way for a guy like Joel Dahman. So I won't mind having him in some GPP lineups for sure. All right, 7,500 and above, Jesse. What are you looking at here?
Start with Noren at 7,900. He's never played here. Coming off a solid 18th at the RSM. Missed the cut at Houston Open, but had a bunch of made cuts before that. Has been playing pretty well. Adam Long, 7,800, finished third here last year. Has made four straight cuts on tour, including a 30th there at the RSM. So I like him quite a bit. And then Brian Gay, I know you mentioned him in the fan share stuff. I mean, course history is really good with him. I don't know before 2011, but last year, 14th, year before, 41st, 25th, 28th, 45th, 55th, 5th. Now, not great finishes, but he's making the cut. So, I mean, I would probably consider him for cash this week.
Yeah, Brian Gay has played 9 times here since 2010. 14th, 41st, 25th, 28th, 45th, 55th, 6th, 20th, 1st. Never missed a cut.
Pretty good.
Yeah, since 2010. Given, you know, he won a few weeks back, but then he missed like 14 straight cuts. So you got to he's all over the place right now. But if you want to go course history at 75, not the worst thing you could do. I'm with you there. A couple guys I'm looking at, Scott Piercy, playing really, really good right now. He's $7,900. He's 26th, 6th, 4th, 16th. His last four times out here at this event, coming in 18th, 32nd, 14th, 18th as well. So good form, played well here. Don't mind Piercy at 79. Chez Reavie at 77, starting to figure it out again. He's made all 7 cuts I've seen him play here since 2010. He's made 5 straight in 5 straight years, including a 26th, 26th, 14th, and a 4th the last 4 years. He missed the cut at the RSM, which is disappointing, but 29th at the Masters shows he might be getting close to getting back to normal. So Chez at 77. GPP only Sepp Straka, because he can get wonky with the driver. He missed a cut here last year, but current form in fields like this, at birdie events like this, he's going bananas. So I don't mind Sepp at 76 in a GPP only. He's got some bonkers upside. And similar to Brian Gay, not nearly as many events, but Chris Kirk, he's made all 3 cuts here, 33rd, 48th, and 7th, 18th at the RSM, 44th this event prior to that, working his way back from the off the course issues he had and the good story behind all that. But 75 hundo for a guy like Chris Kirk, who can play well and is, you know, he won on the Korn Ferry Tour, to get back to getting established on this tour. So I don't mind him at 75 either. Now, this is where it gets fun, because you don't want to go into the 6K range if you don't have to. So $7,000 to $7,400. I have a list of names here because I'll be mixing and matching them all. What do you like in this range?
I actually don't mind the 6K range. I guess at least I don't mind it as much as you do this week. But Doug Gim, 7,400, never played here. 3 straight made cuts, 3 straight top 25s on tour. Peter Malnati, 7,300, 59th here last year, 3 missed cuts before that, and then a 10th and 15th in 2015, 2013, and has made 5 straight cuts on tour, including 2 top 5s in that time frame, 48th last time out there at the RSM. And then Mav McNeely at 7,200, finished 27th here last year, missed cut at the RSM. I mean, he's very boom or bust, but you know, for a GPP, I don't see many people being on him. Looks like his buzz score at this point right now on Fantasy Labs is very low. So Mav McNeely at 7,200, I think, is a good GPP little sprinkle.
Yeah, I had Doug Gim there as well. He's going to be mighty popular. Let's take a little glance, because I've heard his name a ton. People like picking him to win this event, because he's been a top 15, top 20 machine right now. He's only projected to be about a little less than 9% owned. I could play with that all day long. So
yeah.
If that stays that way, Doug Gim at 74, then Johnny Huh at 74 as well. He's been battling back from the medical exemption. He missed a cut here 2 years ago, but then 25th, 28th, missed cut, 29th, 23rd, 1st. So similar to Charles Howell, for about $1,000 cheaper, he like tops 30s for you if he makes the cut, which at his price point, I could live with. He got a 12th at the RSM, 48th, 19th prior to that since his return on the fall swing. So he's a guy I don't mind looking at. Denny McCarthy, 3 straight made cuts here. Missed the cut at the RSM, but again, best putter on tour, slow greens, that can get real interesting for him. So he's in play. Paul Malnati, he choked on Sunday. That's why he finished 40th at the RSM. He was the first round leader there. I'll be back on that train. And then a few others I don't mind kind of mixing and matching here. Adam Hadwin, 10th and 10th in his last 2 events here before 2 missed cuts, but coming in some shaky forms. Keep that in mind. Matt McNeely, I like that call as well. Vaughn Taylor plays short courses amazing, and especially short ocean courses. Second here last year. He's made all six cuts here since 2010, including a 28th and a 16th. So he's thrown some other top 30s in there. He had a 30th the RSM. So I don't mind going to Vaughn Taylor at 71, and I love Bryce Garnett. 11th, 6th, 25th, 7th, 6th, his last five events at this event. And I mentioned he loves these ocean courses, Punta Cana, Mayakoba, Bermuda, all those ones. He loves playing. He's got a couple W's on these courses. So I'll gamble with a $7,000 Bryce Garnett. He does well on Paspal and Greens as well. So he's interesting. And then last but not least, Camilo Villegas, great ball striker, crappy putter. So if you think you can get the putter going again, you know, he finished 6th at the RSM. He's had a rough Sunday. He's made 4 or 5 cuts here, including 2 top 30s. So if you think he can putt, I think he's a great play at $7,000 because he can go low as well. So like a Garnett and Villegas combo down there could do a lot for you up top, and they both have win equity in my opinion. So that's where I'll be looking. The 6K range, you said you like it. What do you like down here?
I think there's some guys to play down here. Brian Stewart at 6,900.
I'm with you there.
23rd miscut, 9th, 35th, 71st, second since 2010 here at this golf course for him now. Two straight made cuts before that, two straight made cuts, miscut, made cut, three straight miscuts. I mean, he's all over the place. So he's obviously GPP only. Will Gordon, he finished 55th here last year, coming off a miscut, the RSM. I think he's okay. Hubbard at 6,800, 59th here last year, has made at this course 3 or 4 cuts. He's coming off a miscut at the RSM. Brendan Steele, man, from a like stats perspective, not good. Like, I don't know what he's been doing or if it was just his last time out at RSM. He did not play well. He shot 72-80 to miss the cut. So not great. But at this course, 42nd miscut, 37th, 16th. And then Kiradek, dude, my dude, 6,600. He showed up on the stats tomorrow. I don't know why. Maybe because he played well at the Masters Bermuda.
Performance.
Or he didn't play. I wish he played the Masters. He would have made the cut for sure on the number with a birdie on 18. But 11th at the Bermuda, last time out. He's never played here, but, I mean, that's really what it's got to be is he played well there. So I'm hoping he's turned his season around a little bit. And then dipping down just kind of down here toward the bottom, 6,200. There's Bramlett and Wagner, who I would consider playing if you're all the way down there, you know, toward the bottom.
Yep, you picked up on a couple. I like Stewart quite a bit. The recent form, like you mentioned, shaky, but the rest of it you can definitely get behind. So I like Stewart. I think Wes Bryan at 66 is interesting. If you want shorter courses with potential weather, you know, maybe not these resort ocean courses, but he loves playing over there in Harbortown and whatnot. So shorter course, accuracy off the tee, iron game. That's what Wes Bryan does very well. Missed cut here in a 42nd. It's 2 times he's played. So you can take a chance on him if you choose. I do like Johnson Wagner at 62. He stood out to me for probably the same reasons you did. His course history, he's made 5 of 7 cuts here, you know, made cut back at the Bermuda. He's 6,200. And he had that look at the Bermuda with the porn stash, the Budweiser old school hat. Like, he just looked like he was ready to party. So that was a very – I think Kevin needs to call him up and see – who dresses him, because that's an interesting combo there. And then also at 62, Bo Hogue, 20th here last year, 30th at the RSM, missed a handful of cuts prior to that, though, and then like a 29th. So he's kind of an all-or-nothing play here, but he rates out well. We're looking at fan share at courses like this. So Bo Hogue at 62, another guy that I don't mind in this range. All right, let's recap things. Your top play, 10K and above.
It's JT.
All right, I should have clarified that. I'll go Harris English. I really like English this weekend, and that price at 10-1. I will enjoy that top play in the 9K range.
I'm going to say Zalatoris, but from like a ownership perspective, I'm thinking Hovland.
Yeah, he will be lower owned. I'm going to go with Connors. I'm going to eat the chalk there. I really like Corey Connors this week, so you guys will know how my weekend goes by that one. 8K range, give me two guys.
Griot and Howell.
Good calls. I'm going to go Ortiz and Griot. I'm going to go Ortiz and Griot. I'm going in on Griot, so this is going to be a really tilting Thursday and Friday. I can already see it coming. 7,500 to 7,900. Give me one guy.
I'll say Adam Long.
I'm going to go with Scott Piercy. I like him quite a bit. 7K to 7,400. Let's go two.
Gim and Malnati.
I like him. I'll go Huh and Bryce Garnett. That'll be my two, but I love the two you mentioned too. I really like that range. I'm going to have a lot of 7K guys to kind of leak out of that 6K. Who's your top 6K player?
I'm going to say, man, I don't even like saying it. I'm Will Gordon, not a huge fan. I like Kyrdek, but more.
I'm going to go Brian Stewart, but it's just usually six cat. I feel like confident in some of these guys, like we've got James Holland and some others. I'm just not as like I wouldn't be shocked if there's some of these top 10 type guys.
But, not sure about being confident in James Holland though.
Well, in his recent performance, a couple weeks ago, he's at 69. We're like, okay, we got to play him. I guess it's pretty simple stuff here. We used to have our boy Harry Higgs or something. Like, yeah, let's play that guy. Yeah,
Bryce Higgs in there.
You know, he is. He's up in the low sevens, and I can't pay for that right now.
Ah, 7K exactly, right on the number.
Yeah, it's just like the old Delonto rule. You start getting too expensive, we got to take a step back and just appreciate you for who you are. If you're starting out a cash game this week, what three guys are you looking to start out with?
And cash would be rough. I did mention Brian Gay. I think he's borderline cash viable. I think he's cash viable. You know, I mean, it's really weird. Miscut for five straight weeks and then win, but that's golf. His course history is good enough. And then I think Connors is getting there, even though he's very tilting. And you know, if you want somebody kind of down more toward the bottom, Howell. I mean, I don't know.
You got two out of my three. I got English, Connors, and Howell. That's where I'm starting out.
I would trust you more than my judgment in cash. I haven't played cash in a while, so.
Yeah, I'm a safety net guy. You know, doing stuff with you and some other guys gets me more in a GPP feel because you guys like to look at that angle. I look at the safe floor instead of the high ceiling most of the time.
I'm just trying to win 100 grand, man.
See, that's where you are. I'm just like, I just want to keep making money every week. Which I'm not saying I don't want to win 100 grand. Don't get me wrong. Like,
but that also doesn't that also is a good strategy because you don't lose as much. So,
well, you have to have the mentality. You have to be willing to know you're going to lose like majority of the weeks if you're going for the gold.
Oh, I know.
Like you can't wait. You can't like Sunday afternoon go like in full depressed mode. You just can't do it. You have to know going into it. Like this is going to happen more than it's not.
Yeah, for sure.
GPP lineups. Give me three you're starting out with.
I'd say Brooks, Mav, McNeely, and then I would try to fit in like Hovland.
Yeah, some might say this is more cash, but I'm going to go answer Connors and Ortiz. I think all three of those guys have a great chance to win. But that's me this week. I really like those three guys. I know the first two are quite chalky, but we'll differentiate later on. All right. Last but not least, this is a fun field to do the top 20s for sure, but I think there's some long shots you can play here, or longer shots. Who are some of the guys you're looking at this week to win this event, or potentially, if you were to gamble, put bets down on?
Yeah, Bovada's got JT at 5-1, which...
Yeah, parlay if you're going to do that.
It's really, really low. I mean, I guess that in this field, given his recent performances, you know, it makes sense. Maybe Connors at 30.
I like that.
Griot at 55, potentially. Mm-hmm. Can he win? I don't know that. And then maybe more of a long shot, you know, if we're way down here, Malnati at 100.
Yeah, I like all three of those quite a bit. Bryce Garnett at 125. If you really believe in course fit, this is his course fit. So it's a tougher field than usual because usually those events he plays that he does well in aren't loaded at all. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But 125-1 makes it, even if you want top 20 that or something, that could be something to look at. We didn't even talk about Andy Ogletree, the guy, the top amateur at the Masters who went pro. He's in this event. He's going to be pretty popular this week in his price range. But it's an interesting range here. I like those guys you mentioned. If I have to throw anybody else out there, I think Adam Long at 50-1 is pretty interesting as well. You mentioned some good stuff on him, and he does play well on these kind of courses. So don't mind him at 50-1 as well. Before we wrap it up, I did have one more thing to ask you. I should have probably been a good host and asked it before we started the breakdown. But over the last 2 weeks since we last recorded, the PGA Tour and the European Tour reached an agreement on some things, which the assumptions are leading to a potential PGA Euro combined schedule in the future, or some kind of overlap, something along those lines. Do you see something like that happening? Would you be a fan of that, knowing that maybe a third of our events are going to be on the Euro Tour, which is cool courses to play, but would really mess our world up?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be fine with it. I think playing golf all over the world for the best players is
great for the game.
I saw people posting about that. I haven't looked into it at all. Like, literally have not had time to do anything but work and then gamble on football and then sleep. So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I, you know, for me, I think if we get a more of a world tour or a Euro United States tour, I would be for that. I mean, I think, seeing different golf courses, I'm always a fan of that.
Yeah. Like, well, the guys are all going to be in Dubai next week. Now, if you make it like a sanctioned PGA event, there you go. Like, it makes it even, it's more than just a cash grab.
Yeah.
So I think it's fun because, you know, we talk about a lot on this show. There's a lot of the Euro Tour guys I love playing in DFS. I love rooting for. It might give them more incentive to come to America to play some events because we don't play, vice versa. So it's good for everybody as a whole. I'm curious to see where it completely goes to. But I think it'll also – I think another reason why it's good is it'll help with, like, the Ryder Cups and President Cups where there's been differences in how you pick your teams and all the rankings and all that stuff. That'll kind of even things out as well. So be kind of fun to see. And for the dumb Americans that can't play Euro courses in the Ryder Cup, now they might get to play them a little more often and get some familiarity. That'd be good too, because we don't get embarrassed in like Paris again. So just little thoughts like that.
I'm with you.
But all right, final thoughts on the Mayakoba on the end of the 2020 calendar golf season.
Good luck.
Yep, there you go. Good luck, everybody. We'll be back with you in a few weeks, if not by Sony. I don't think we'll do a Dubai event one, but hey, you never know. We might get bored. But don't count on it. Just going to put it that way. If you want to talk about it, we'll talk about it in the Slack chat for sure, because guys were bored last week, and they're putting in Euro lineups. So don't worry about that. They're always playing something in there. If it's not golf, it's something else. But it's free to get into, so just let us know. We'll get you up in there. Check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. I'm at BDentric. If you give a rate and review on iTunes for the podcast, that would mean a ton. It helps out a lot. But other than that, enjoy the week, enjoy the year, and have some safe holidays. We'll talk to you again. See ya. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when they come up.